It's Thursday, 5:26. It's championship weekend. I'm here with the big dog, Caleb. What's up, my man?
How we doing, Dan? Love to be on, and what a weekend we had.
Yeah, it was a great weekend, and we're going to preview it. Stage is set for the national championship with RIT and Union in a Liberty on Liberty League contest. But before we get to it, I have a question for you.
What's up?
What are great moments born by?
Great opportunities?
Great opportunity. And that's what you have here tonight, boys. That's what you earned here tonight. One game. If we played them 10 times, they might win 9. But not this game. Not tonight.
And that's it. We got one game, but you got to go out there and take it. And so on a week where Union's going to hear a whole lot that you can't do it, the D3 podcast is here to tell you that we believe in you. We believe in an underdog story. Woo!
I'm fired up, Dan. Oh, my goodness.
This is going to be a good one. We got a big podcast coming up for you. The juices are pumped in here. We hope you guys are excited too. Let's get to some review. What do you think?
Let's do it.
All right. Well, got to get to some review here. But before we do, how was the wedding?
Oh, it was awesome, man. You know, it's always great to be a part of someone's special day like that. And, you know, these are friends that I built back in York, you know, through lacrosse. So definitely wouldn't have been there if I wasn't part of the program and made the decisions that I made to go to York and play D3 lacrosse. So happy I made those decisions, and it led me to a great time and to be with some great people. So it was an awesome time. But it was difficult to try to watch all these games, but I tell you, the big dog was there for you. I watched all these games, caught it all, and I'm so pumped to get into it.
Yeah, I'm glad you were able to swing that. I know that I saw you had some pictures going of you with like a couple small screens going, using some phones and an iPad. So
I was actually in the groomsmen room, you know, where everyone gets ready and it's, you know, super, you know, intimate or whatever. The photographer's in there taking pictures. I had the York CNU game up going into overtime. Yeah. It was me and Ben Jones just sitting around a table. Oh, yeah. It was great.
Yeah, that's the commitment that we need out of you as the unpaid, completely volunteer D3 analyst here on the Inside the Cross podcast. That's what we love.
Love of the game, baby. It's the love of the game.
That's right. All right, well, let's get to it. And let's start with Saturday. So we'll set the table for Sunday. Wait, are you going to ask me about my trip to Rochester?
Oh, well, first off, how did we even know you were going to Rochester? You know, you kept the people on their toes the whole time.
I did. It was fun that way, wasn't it? Kind of.
It really was.
Made for some.
I enjoyed it.
You also were the only, like, that hit a little bit harder for you because you were getting pictures that were purposely misleading.
And I figured you were probably going to do something like that since you hinted at it.
Yeah, so for example, as I was driving down, I didn't tell Kayla where I was going to go the entire time. I didn't tell really anybody besides, like, I mean, my wife knew where I was going. My mom and dad knew where I was going. My brothers knew that I was going where I was going. But, like, very few people knew other than that. Oh, and, like, the people that I work with, obviously. And so I kind of kept it tight so that I could have some fun with people as I was doing it, including Kayla, who, instead of sending normal pictures, like, I don't know, the New York border or whatever, to say, like, oh, yeah, I'm going up here. I found the one, like, southern-looking thing that I could possibly find on my drive, which was something that's called a horse expo. I have no idea what it was. It was in the middle of nowhere, absolutely middle of nowhere. Just all of a sudden on the left-hand side, there's a massive, like, Coliseum looking building, like the is called the Horse Expo. I had no idea what was going on there. But anyways, that was a good time.
It looked like a great time. I think if we ever got a free weekend, me and you should head up to the Horse Expo.
The Horse Expo was kind of crazy, man. Like, it was packed too. It was like there was nothing for miles except for this extremely crowded, massive Coliseum that they call it a horse farm expo or something. Like, I mean, it was wild.
Sounds like a fun trip, though.
The trip itself was a really good time. You remember?
Yeah.
Actually, you weren't on the team. This was when I was coaching, so you wouldn't have been around. But when we went up for the 2018 trip to RIT, we went to the Dinosaur Barbecue place.
Oh yeah,
awesome.
I saw all the dino pics. Oh yeah.
I went back. I spent a few hours there. I had some time to kill after my hotel. Like, I had to check out, but game wasn't starting until 3. So just went down there, hung out with the ladies at the bar for like a few hours. They put the game on for me on ESPNU, served me up. It was a good spot.
Nice. Sounds like you made the most of the trip there.
Big time. All right. So let's go ahead. We'll get into it now, and we'll officially set the table looking at Saturday's games, setting the table for Sunday's games, and then we'll just kind of roll through it. First one I want to start with, quarterfinals. We'll start with RIT 20, Bowdoin 14. And did you get to catch much of this one? What were your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, this was a tough one. You know, we've watched Bowdoin all year come back and scrap it out and play some close games and beat, you know, some really good teams. But, you know, I think the gas was kind of running out for this Bowdoin team, so to speak. I think RIT was probably just the more talented team here. So I think at the end of the day, you saw the more talented team come away with it. But that's not taking anything away from Bowdoin. I mean, they had a great run. They were hot all year, and they just kind of, you know, were fizzling out towards this end of the year here. But great run for them, and, you know, just great group of guys. What did you think, though, since you got to see this one in person?
Yep, so I did get to see this one in person, and I got to meet with the Coach Mason and a few of his guys on Friday night before the action kind of kicked off. So, in general, just really impressed with the program and the maturity of some of their guys. And one really cool thing that I learned when I met with them is, so the COVID year that canceled everything, few of them stuck together. Actually, I guess in 2020 they went back, but there were leases for the 2021 year. And so there were a bunch of guys that were just still together that had houses, and they would go and they would like scrap together cash and rent out like indoor facilities at 6 a.m. on Friday mornings, because it was just like freezing out and snow everywhere, and that was going to be their only time and place that they would be able to get some work in. And then, you know, like instances when, you know, they could get on fields, they would go and just get on like muddy grass, like park fields, and throw out like a rage cage and stuff like that. But like, they were getting work in through all that time. And really the more important thing that they talked about in terms of like, you know, them being developing during that time wasn't just skill wise or lacrosse wise, but just developing relationships, which they have so many young guys that were making impacts for them. But they basically were saying, you know, like, they're playing with so much confidence knowing that they have such strong relationships within the program, which was really cool. And, you know, a really valuable time spent with them, learning a little bit about their program, which was cool.
Yeah, this isn't going to be a team that is going to be a, you know, one and done fizzle out. You know, we're going to be talking about them for a couple more years to come, and hopefully longer than that, because they seem like a great group of guys.
Yeah, and this is Coach Mason's first year with them, you know, so like, you know, Bowdoin stock is definitely on the rise here. This game specifically, definitely, you know, RIT kind of owned starting in the second quarter, and just kind of it avalanched from there. RIT is one of the teams and Tufts you can throw in the same category, but if you have a 6 or 10 minute span against either one of those teams, and actually, I mean, Bowdoin is one of those teams too. If you have a 6 or 10 minute span where you turn the ball over a whole bunch in the middle of the field, you can't seem to, you know, scrap a face off, or, you know, you can't seem to make possessions count when you do get them. If that happens for, you know, that type of a span, you're done. And they're going to capitalize on one or two in transition. They're going to capitalize in one off the ride. They're going to capitalize in their settled set. You know, maybe you foul them at some point. There goes an EMO goal because they're excellent man up. You know, like RIT is just one of those teams. You can't have that type of a lapse against. And unfortunately for Bowden, you know, it happens for them. And RIT, man, just they look so complete.
Yeah, they really do. I mean, they're really firing on all cylinders, and we'll get into it a little bit more with the Tufts game, but wow, they're looking pretty good. This isn't a team I want to play right now or anytime ever.
Yeah, and so we're obviously going to preview a good bit of RIT and Union here towards the end. So while we're going through, you know, winners and losers right now in the review, we'll spend a little bit less time on them, knowing that we're going to hit them a little bit harder on the back end. What do you say about that?
Love that. Yep.
All right. So let's keep it moving for right now. I think that kind of hits Bowden. You know, great season. Team that just had no expectations. Preseason just would really just came on and burst it to the scene. They have three losses on the year. They end up having two to Tufts and one to RIT, which that one ultimately ends their season. So, you know, if any time you have three losses and two of them are to those teams, you probably had a pretty dang good season. Throw on the fact that it's a coach in year one. Throw on the fact that they haven't played any lacrosse in 2021 when they played like three games or four games or something like that in 2020. You know, just an incredible season for them. They sweep in NESCAC honors with coach of the year, rookie of the year, player of the year, you know, like, the honors and accolades for them this season go on and on and on. So another team to just kind of keep watching.
Yeah, and one more thing real quick before I move on from Bowden too. Just want to give a big shout out to Hobbs over there. I mean, he kept this. I mean, I couldn't let the book close on them without mentioning it, man. Like, he kept them in the game so many times and was like such a huge piece of the reason why they were so successful this year and kind of made this run that they were. No offense to their defense at all, because I mean they have some players there, but you know, looking out throughout the year, they weren't really a standout unit. Like, he was the guy that was kind of the rock down there that kept the whole thing together, like the glue down there. So just to know that they have some more years with him too, on top of the way that he kind of played this year, I absolutely love it, and I'm gonna love to watch him play for a couple more years here.
All right, so let's go ahead. We'll stay up here for the other quarterfinal action. We had Tufts 17, Salisbury 10. This one I know you got to see a big piece of because you were hitting me up about the kick saves. Why don't you take it starting with those?
Yeah, absolutely awesome. And, you know, this was going to be one where, you know, we had to have some people that probably weren't the usual suspects for playmakers to come through and make some game-changing plays. I know we still, you know, had the Bradle show here in the second quarter, which I'll get to. But, you know, those huge saves by Garzone on Ferreira off the foot on the doorstep, like, which was a turning point in the game. It was huge. And, you know, you kind of after that happened and Garzone locked it down, like, you know, you kind of knew that Tufts was going to kind of roll with this. And, you know, with the year that Garzone has, you know, it hasn't been super stellar at times for him. It's been a little up and down. So just to kind of see him be such a difference maker in this game was great to see. But yeah, so moving forward from it, you know, it was a real tight game all throughout there. But then you just had the Bradle show in the second quarter there. I mean, what is here? I'm going to go down the second quarter's like scoring list for you here. Bradle unassisted. Bradle assists Jack. Bradle unassisted. We got one from Tommy Swank. One Bradle assisted Camden. And one more from Tommy Swank. So, I mean, that whole run there in the second quarter is all fed from Bradle there. He ran the show. And when he's on and when he's getting the ball and moving things, you can tell this team is a completely different team. He's an absolute game changer. So when he kind of took command in the second quarter there, that's when I kind of felt that, you know, it still was a back and forth game. Not going to say Salisbury was out of it after the second, but kind of felt like Tufts was commanding the lead there and was going to take it home there.
Yeah, and, you know, the biggest thing for this one was Salisbury came in and they start the game orchestrating two step downs from top center for Jarrett Bromwell, and he just absolutely, like, rocks the goal, like, literally lifts the goal off the ground with these just, like, hammers. Like, just pins the corner, sticks that high to start the game. You're like, oh, boy, like, if they can do that all game, this might be trouble, you know? And that was kind of what we expected going into it, is that Salisbury was going to try and use those big shooters and shoot them out of that zone. And so they come out, they carry on that high right corner, throw back and step into the seam. So now you have a two-on-one at top center, one more to top center, and boom, two in a row. And then after that, Tufts adjusts to it, realize that that's kind of what's coming. And the only other form of offense they really got throughout the day was Ferreira working and, like, working on the corners and making something spectacular happen. Or when they did have a good chance on goal, like, they did have some high opportunities from some high percentage chances when they could have potentially, you know, strung one together, maybe put a little bit of pressure on, and now things could go your way, a couple bounces. But they didn't even really give themselves a chance, shooting a few high percentage looks wide in those moments.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. It's tough to see for Salisbury there.
Yep. And so really interesting with that. I thought Shaheen in goal played actually pretty good. You know, there's a few maybe at his feet that he potentially could have had back. But again, Tufts was able to get to spots that are pretty high percentage opportunities, and they were able to get stuff in the ride, which obviously always leads to higher percentage opportunities in some awkward scenarios where maybe now he's having to scramble back into the goal, you know, just different situations where you can probably see how maybe not the best possible shot can squeak by.
Yeah, I've been pretty tough on ZJ all year, but, you know, he really did come out to play today or for this game, you know, 16 saves. You know, Tufts is going to get out and get those shots, so you have to be on point. And so he definitely wasn't the reason or, you know, a big factor of why they lost this game. You know, he definitely could have had some where it would have been a kind of a game changer, but not the reason for this loss by any means. So, and just the fact that, you know, he's a young guy. They got at least three more years, I think, with him. So with that, you know, he's definitely going to be a staple in that Salisbury defense for years to come.
Yeah, and that's a good point, and it kind of leads me to where I want to go next, which is Salisbury kind of moving forward. Obviously, in the national championship discussion, you know, no question there. They're always going to be. The guy that coaches them has more rings than fingers, so you can kind of assume that they're always going to be in the discussion when it comes to them. Defensively, they bring everybody back on that side of the ball, including, you know, their anchor in the cage. So they'll be interesting to see. Ferreira, I believe, technically could come back. So, you know, something to keep an eye out for. Definitely keep an ear out for. If you have any Salisbury connections in there, you know, hit them up, see if they know anything about what Ferreira's plan is for the future. I could be wrong on that, but, like, COVID years and all that type of stuff has just completely thrown me off. So off the top of my head, I think that's possible. Not totally, totally sure. But yeah, it'll be an interesting group if he doesn't come back next year.
Yep.
So their makeup will be, you know, one thing over the offseason, kind of keep an eye on. You ready to move on here from this one, though? Anything else to say?
Yeah.
I will just drop a couple stats here then. Ferreira finishes the season with 119 points, 91 goals, 28 assists. And then they played obviously a pretty high strength of schedule. And then Bromwell with 87 points as a midfielder and just 19 turnovers on 87 points. So just, you know, pretty tremendous numbers there from those two guys. Zach Timmons, their defensive leader, guards a whole bunch of top guys, has had a pretty strong season. Kind of a sour taste in his mouth going out, giving up an 8-pointer to Bradall, but I mean, he's got it done all season against some of the top defenders, so not necessarily the high standard, you know, or the low standard, I should say.
Yeah. I mean, Bradle's going to get his either way, but you know, great experience for him out there, and I think he's going to come back next year even stronger. And yeah, just also want to highlight that. What did you say? 19 turnovers all year? Was that 18? What was that stat?
Yeah, no, that's correct. He has 87 points. I forget exactly what the breakdown is, but I'll say, you know what? Let's play the guessing game. You got your your browser up. Pull them up.
Here we go. I'm ready.
I'll say it's 56 goals.
51 goals.
Overdid it. But that, I mean, that kind of makes sense. He's, you know, has ridiculous goal numbers on his career. So he's probably, you can, so he's been getting slid to, obviously, for a while. And that's going to open up lanes for him to drop some assist numbers behind it. So that probably makes sense in hindsight.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. But yeah, huge shout out for that. That's a huge stat and something that should be recognized. Cause I mean, if you can take care of the ball like that, it just creates so much more offense for your team. And that's such a gem to have on your squad there.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So let's keep it moving here then. Let's go down, and we're going to go to the other site down at CNU and Newport News. And dealer's choice here, which game do you want to start with? Union, Gettysburg, York, CNU.
Let's do Union, Gettysburg. I just got done rewatching that film, so we can really break it down here.
Let's hit it while it's fresh then. You just hit it. You just said it. You are just broke down the film here, caught it back a little bit. What are your number one takeaways from your top takeaways from watching that film back?
Yeah, I mean, this was really like a game of tempo, I thought. I mean, Gettysburg came out hot. They got the first one there, and they were kind of controlling the pace, and it looked like Union was a little on their toes. They did get the one in it kind of in transition there, which was big. But other than that, it really just felt like it was all Gettysburg there until the end of the quarter. With that goal there. But then right after that, Gettysburg comes out hot right at the beginning of the second quarter, kind of dominates there, and it really puts Union in a hole, kind of similar to what they did to York the next day, which we'll get into. But props to Union. They were able to battle back through that. They didn't get down on themselves. And, you know, Gettysburg has a good goalie, so that, you know, they were kind of set up and poised, you know, if they have a big lead to keep it. But Union was able to battle back and just kind of grind it out. So props to them for battling through. Loved it. I thought one of the biggest things was 7 for 9 in faceoffs for Union in that fourth quarter. So that's what really led them to kind of come back and keep them in the game and kind of control the pace at the end of the game, which was so important throughout it, because it kind of just felt like whoever was controlling that pace and tempo was winning the game there. So that was all great. And then, you know, only other note I had was Burns is an absolute wizard. I mean, the way he scores and how frequently he scores is just incredible. So props to him, props to the Union squad. That was a great battle for them.
Yeah, so well said. And really weird game where, like, despite some teams going on some runs within the quarter, it's a really weird game where at the end of each quarter, it's tied going into the next quarter in all instances except for, obviously, the end of the game in the fourth quarter. I like your point there about the faceoffs in the fourth quarter, you know, getting yourselves those extra possessions, keeping the ball out of the sticks of the other team's hot offense in those moments is, you know, pays a huge dividend in that. That Union offense gets really, really good play out of Keaton McCann towards the end of that game, scoring a right-handed goal up the hash, hitting an assist on a throwback back to Kieran McGovern, who now had plenty of time and room for a step down, and then ultimately scoring the game winner, catching the ball on the pipe and then like turning the corner nice and tight and diving around, finding like space around the goalie for a really, really nice goal, you know, so getting it done in three different, very different ways. But getting it done, finding the back of the net, and, you know, that's a senior making senior plays to kind of keep his team going and keep his team dancing and, you know, like just huge, huge plays that's what makes the difference in those moments. You know, your seniors go out and find ways to get it done and make the plays that it takes to put you in a championship situation.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I thought Donahue, you know, he stepped up early and kind of kept them in the game too. You know, he kind of faded off a little bit towards the end there. So that might be something we can talk about here kind of leading up. But, you know, he was definitely a difference maker, and their guys came out to play, and it showed up there at the end of the game. So props to them.
Yep. And Gettysburg ends the season at 14-8. A really weird season for them. Some interesting highs and lows, you know, like some not so great performances, some upsets in there, and then coming and, you know, finding a way to get it done in the NCAA tournament, beating Roanoke, then beating Dickinson, then getting themselves into a spot with Union where, you know, late in that game, a few bounces go their way and, you know, they could absolutely still be playing right now, or like just a really resilient team that, you know, you have to give credit for putting themselves in that type of a situation down the stretch.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, McMillan, he's had quite the career there too. He's been a stud in goal for him since he's been there. So shout out to him. You know, great year for him. And, you know, not the exact ending that he wanted, but, you know, for the kind of the up and down year that they had for them to get this far was quite the feat. So props to them, and, you know, props to their seniors, and looking forward to kind of seeing how they can reload for next year.
Yep. And one person I quickly want to shout out, I guess I'll get two shout outs. Actually, I have a couple shout outs. I lied. I'm going to stick mostly to the offensive side of the ball, though, and first want to shout out George Raymond for him. You know, like, he's a guy that over the course of his career, and especially this season, has just continued to evolve and grow with the ball in his stick, and as a Dodger, you know, really going at his defender. And he scores a goal in that game late where he's got Puglisi guarding him, who, in my opinion, is one of the top, you know, easily top five defenders in the country, potentially, you know, arguably better than that for sure. And that may be putting it lightly. So, you know, and Raymond just kind of takes him to the rack with the game on the line in a tight situation, squares him up, takes his right hand hard, turns the corner and scores, you know. So, like, props to him for kind of piecing together that part of his game that is, you know, really starting to develop as he continues to get a little bit older. And then Spencer Knight, who really kind of found his home at attack, I think, this year, fitting into that left-handed spot, bouncing down from midfield where they had Kieran Ward and Kyle Howard, who, you know, ultimately had great seasons. They just missed bits and pieces throughout the year with some injuries that, you know, obviously impacted a little bit.
All right, yeah, that's some good points there, Dan. You ready to move on from this one?
Yeah, I don't think I have anything left in this. Like we said, we're obviously going to hit lots of Union talk here in a little bit when we go down to our preview segment. So let's get to, you know, the main show of Saturday, the quarterfinals, overtime action. York playing the underdog role, playing spoiler against the top seed CNU Captains. Obviously an amazing win for the Spartans, and Jacob Wilhelm caps it off with a Ryan Kennedy pickoff, you know, two older guys, two veterans getting it done, which, you know, very cool to see. And then obviously I have to give props to a CNU team that was excellent all season, you know, and just continues to show tremendous strides as a program. And, you know, we've battled with them for years, so obviously I have a ton of respect for those guys.
Yeah, lots of respect there. You know, I know they had a lot of guys graduating after this year, so kind of great run for them to go on. You know, kind of short from what they were expecting, but you know, nothing to hang their heads on. They had a great year. I'm sure they made a lot of good memories. They got to host the final four and Elite Eight. Like, that's absolutely incredible. So props to them, and they came out and they really gave York their all here in this game. I mean, this was another one that was just what a game to watch. And, you know, as a York fan, you know, it it gave me almost a heart attack. You know, I was jumping up and down, yelling. I was happy. I was freaking out. It was the whole range of emotions, Dan. But you know, what were you thinking here watching this?
Yeah, and I do really like your point about that. You know, their run, and obviously that's not me saying it's over by any means. They have a ton of young talent on that team.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Great staff that's going to continue to develop guys. But this was Coach Thompson's first recruiting class as a head coach. So obviously, you know, means a bunch for them to be able to have strung together the season that they did. Obviously, you know, the goal is to win a conference and a national championship, and they fall a bit short in both of those categories. But like you said, memories, you know, broken records, program strides, all of these things that are just, you know, not replaceable.
Exactly. Yep. Absolutely huge.
And speaking of program records, you have the Spartans breaking through the Elite Eight and getting to the Final Four for the first time in program history. You have freshman Ben Mayer breaking single-season point record for Thomas Pfeiffer, who was a first-team All-American in his career. And so you have Kennedy, who broke the career record for calls turnovers in a season. I think that's it. Oh, Will Harnick passed Coach Witcher in goals in their career. So the real record is having that type of bragging rights over your coach.
There you go. And a PLL standout too, I might add.
Yes, very true. All right, so with that all said and kind of the table set there on this one, what were some of your deeper thoughts now that you have to take your York alum hat off and put your big dog analyst hat on and tell me a little bit about what you think in this game?
Yep, hat just got turned, so you know it's getting analyst time here. So I mean, York came out kind of, you know, did what Union did to them the next day, but you know, they kind of got CNU in a hole there a little bit, which I don't think is how CNU plays all year. You know, they've played as being the dominant force, being the one that's dictating tempo. They always have the lead, and you know, you're kind of building up to try to keep up with them. But this isn't what we normally see from York. You know, they came out of the gate firing right away. Dylan Wolf gets that quick one. And once they kind of get on those runs and get the, get the lead, they do a great job with kind of maintaining it for most of the first half there. So props to York for playing hard and coming out strong. And they really gave CNU a run for their money. Now, that's not to say CNU didn't battle back, because they certainly did in that third quarter stretch where they had a run of three goals there to tie it up, make it 6-6. And then, you know, it was just one of those back and forth dogfight games that we normally see from these two teams. You know, we've played each other tons of times. So, you know, this isn't anything unusual. It was a great battle. I think you actually crushed it with your analysis last week, where you said, if this is going to be a game that CNU wins, it's going to have to be where Jack Michael comes out and makes some unbelievable saves. And he sure did that. He kept them in the game, and he just had a couple that were just absolutely stunning. So props to him. He really stood on his head and, you know, came out on the day with 14 saves, and that's exactly what they had to do to win this game. So excellent game. Personally, analyst hat taken back off. You know, this was my game of the day for Saturday. It was so electric, and you know, I'm so happy the boys pulled it off.
All right, so while you have your analyst hat off and you have your fan hat on, tell me about your heart rate during the failed clears in overtime.
Oh my gosh, Dan. Yeah, so this was exactly what I was describing before, where the photographer was taking pictures of the groom and, you know, getting the whole scenery set. And I'm standing over in the corner like a degenerate with my iPad, just staring at this game. And let me tell you, when that first failed clear came, well, started off when they won the faceoff in overtime, I'm just having Gettysburg flashbacks to 2016.
We go early on the wing.
Every time. Not every time, but it's just something every time. I don't know. They just wanted them to have the ball. And then I just say, here it comes, you know, it's the same thing all over again. But no, Jack Michael comes up huge, and you know, That was awesome. And then boom, he comes up huge again. And you know, with the fail clears, and then boom, Ryan Kennedy, an absolute stud, comes up huge and comes in as an absolute game changer and just takes over the game and says, "I'm the best player on this field, and I'm going to show you why." It was so awesome.
Yeah, and the other person that did that on offense is Ben Mayer as a freshman. Did you see his dive?
I see it?
It was like an NLL dunk goal.
Oh, it was so cool.
Ridiculous. Just unreal play.
All around. This had it all, you know, full reins of emotions. You can say with this one. And so with the cheering that took place after that goal was scored, the photographer was really trying to figure out what was going on.
And you got to be fired up for Coach Witcher, who holds that offense that had been just putting up ridiculous numbers to 2 goals in the first half. So, just ridiculous.
Incredible.
All right, and then let's give some CNU love here before we move on. So, obviously, their season ends at that point, ends on Saturday in the Elite Eight. A great season. Really just a fun ride with that group in their experience and their age and, you know, playing a pace and a style that's just tons of energy and enthusiasm and really just looked like a fun group to play for, a fun group that really enjoys getting out and getting after it and competing, which, you know, like, I don't know if I'm a coach and I get that compliment, like, "Hey coach, like, I can tell just watching from film and, you know, watching from the sideline that your team just looks like they have a whole ton of fun." Like, that seems like a pretty good compliment to me.
Definitely. That's the goal at the end of the day. You know, you're here to make memories and become men and learn some valuable life lessons and make some valuable friends along the way. And, you know, for what it's worth, you know, they had a great season and everything there, but the memories that they've made and these friendships that they're going to be able to keep and for the rest of their lives is worth more than anything there. So absolutely awesome to see.
Yep. And then, so statistically, just things to kind of shout out, super impressed with a bunch of guys on this team. Obviously, Max Wayne and Dylan Rice, those are some guys that are, you know, pretty known, some heavy hitters that have been around for a while. Andrew Cook transfers in from Richmond this year and just has a ridiculous season, immediately draws long poles and is able to still get to the cooker and just is a total game changer for them. He ends the season with 69 points on the season.
Nice.
And that's on 52 goals and 17 assists. So, like I said, really just a game changer getting to the goal. Also want to give a shout out to another midfielder for them, Kobe Auslander, who tallies 76 points on the season. He was a huge difference maker for them. A huge part of what gave them their identity on offense was his ability to kind of break his defender down and then read the defense and make him pay from there. Never really did too much, never really, you know, pushed too much. And so, like we said earlier with Bromwell, ridiculous point numbers and ridiculous turnover numbers. Same, or I should say ridiculous points to turnover ratio. Same thing here with Kobe, who has 76 points and just 22 turnovers on the season. So two guys in the midfield that, you know, really get it done for them. Brady Altobello, another guy that's a huge threat, 60-plus point scorer for them in the midfield. So, you know, they're just really deep there, really a top midfield group there. And then we have to touch on his points. We said, you know, obviously he's great, but he's broke 100 points, getting to 105 on the season, 27 turnovers on the year with over 100 points, you know, just – really, really impressive numbers there from Dylan Rice.
Yeah, it was really fun to watch him play this year and all those guys that you listed. And hey, we're going to be able to watch Max Lane a little bit more here, so looking forward to that also.
Yeah, definitely. And then they still had two other guys in addition to the group that I've mentioned, so that was four dudes. They still had two other guys that had 60-plus points, and Drew Miller and Alex Brendes, the other two starting attackmen. So all six of their top guys on that offense end up with 60 points or above on the season, which is just, you know, incredible.
Unheard of. Yep.
All right, so let's move on here from CNU. You touched on a great defense. Some of those guys we get to continue to watch, whether they're coming back or whether they're going to be putting on a PLL jersey with Max Wayne. York advances out of the quarterfinal out of this game. Union advances out of the quarterfinal against Union. Tufts advances out of their quarterfinal against Salisbury. And RIT advances out of their quarterfinal against Bowdoin, which sets the table for Sunday, which I know you got to watch a bit more of with a little bit less of the wedding festivities going on. So biggest takeaways from Sunday. Ready, go.
Wow. RIT. What? Like, they're the Maryland of D3 this year. Like, absolute freaking wagon. Like, how are you going to beat that? It was insane. Well, Maryland, absolutely insane. You want me to tell you what happened, Dan? You want me to break it down for you?
I do. Well, I do want you to break it down for you, but I also want you to realize that Maryland's very undefeated, and in RIT had an upset. They lost that focus for one game.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, not the Maryland, but like, oh my gosh, I don't want to play them ever because they can score 30 goals. And, you know,
I'm giving you a hard time. I'm nitpicking your point here.
Yeah, of course.
Why don't you dive in a little bit and break it down for us? Tell us what the analyst in you found, what analyst Big Dog found in the film.
Yep, so I'm driving home from New York, so obviously both of these games are on at the same time, so I got to put on the York game, of course. And, you know, that doesn't start off the way I expected. You know, we can dive into that one a little bit more specifically here, but, you know, it doesn't start off great, and I'm getting down on it. So I said, you know, let me just take a quick minute, pop on the RIT Tufts game, get a quick update there, see where we're at. And it's 10-1 in the first quarter. And I'm just like floored. Like, are you kidding me? 10-1? Oh my gosh. What'd you think about that start?
Yeah, no, it was incredible. And they score it's happened so fast. And they score like, you know how when you feed one inside and it trickles through or something and you pick it up and score? They score like that. They score in transition. They score both games this weekend, they score off the opening faceoff. The first one, it's face-off guy wins forward. Spillane wins forward to himself, goes down, throws it to command. They run like a V break, so it's like a weird angle. They're nice and low. Throws it right to the wing, first step down, goal. 1-0, 5 seconds into the game. And then in the second one, it's like more of a loose ball scrap, like a heavy-duty, like everybody's kind of pushing, going to, and all of a sudden Jensen comes out with it. One more to the lefty wing. I don't remember off the top of my head if it's Pilcher or Bell. But one of those lefties over there just immediately catch it, quick shot, goal. And so, like, the scoring for them, it just happens so quickly. But not only that, but it happens in such a variety of ways. And, gosh, they're so dangerous.
So, so dangerous. Like, that was just electric. I mean, and then so, you know, I'm bouncing back and forth between the games all day, and you know, this is one where, you know, I thought maybe Tufts could pull back into it, where they kind of battle back, but then RIT just puts their foot on the gas and just stomps on the throat and says it's over. You know, so both this game didn't turn out how I expected it. York Union, you know, didn't turn out the way that I wanted it to. You know, so little disappointing with that, but it was an awesome day of lacrosse. Which one do you want to get into first a little bit?
Let's do RIT and Tufts, because we're going to spend more time probably talking about the Spartans than I don't know. I'll cut that. Let's do RIT and Tufts first. Just because we already kind of started to dive into it with that 10-1 start and just how, you know, quick that happened and how electric it was. And like we said, they score off the opening face-off in that one as well. And that's one of the things that watching this RIT team in person is just flooring, is how good their sticks are. Like, everything is a clean ground ball if they have a first time chance at it. They're never going to turn the ball over in the ride, or I should say when they're getting, they're never going to turn the ball over in the clear. You know, they have just excellent sticks and like they're so poised and comfortable carrying. And not only just like carrying and getting the ball to space and finding an outlet, but like they go to the goal and then all of a sudden they get slid to, and like here comes a backhand feed out over to the pipe that like you never even saw coming. You know, like they're just so good and skilled with their sticks there on the defensive side of the ball, and especially Taylor Jensen in the middle of the field, who on in this game has 8 caused turnovers. He's 5 ground balls and 8 caused turnovers on the day in this game, and so like he's just a menace on the field in that game, and is, you know, ridiculous in person.
Just a game changer, absolutely.
And then I'll have my analyst, my X's and O's hat on for a minute, but like, I was very concerned, and I wrote a bit about it in the preview. I wrote 5 storylines to watch heading into the game, and one of those 5 was RIT stick skills versus tough zone, which I was very worried about from the tough zone perspective. Like, RIT sticks are just so good that I just don't imagine a situation where you are able to not play their hands and allow them to survey and like move the field and manipulate your off-ball pieces to then cut guys behind it. Like, that just sounds like a nightmare situation to have to try and defend. And as they saw pretty quickly in that first quarter, like the ball moves just too quickly for that to happen. But not only does it move too quickly and like they get good looks out of it, but it moves so quickly and then RIT just has some low angle snipes. Like, 2-3 yards above GLE, maybe 4, but ain't not much of, more than that. And like 8 yards wide, you know, 7, like 10 yards wide and like 4 yards above GLE that just stick the corner, you know, and it's like there's no zone that you can stop shots from that spot. And so it was also so contradictory to what they saw the day before with Salisbury, where the ball wasn't moving as much. It was a lot of like attacking the zone and like dodging on the corners of the zone. RIT, it was like everybody steps into the seams, the ball moves quickly, and then they're all shooters and accurate shooters that just found good spots in the net, even from low angle.
Yep, definitely. And hey, just some stats to point out here that I was looking through. You know, Tufts, we normally talk about them getting their 70 to 80, 80 plus shots sometimes. Held to 41 shots on the day here. Against this RIT defense. And, you know, part of it was they just didn't have the ball. And part of it was like when they did get the ball, they've been playing defense the entire time. You know, you can't just run down and shoot it right away. So it just got them out of their game. And, you know, once you get Tufts out of their game with that run and gun pace, they really struggle. And we saw it earlier on this year. They struggled when teams got them out, and RIT knew exactly what to do. And they really exposed that aspect there. So and props to RIT.
Yeah, and really the only way that the ball got into Bradall's stick, and like he just does so much of the orchestrating for them. Like the ball, like their offense is so dependent on him creating something. The only way that the ball really even got into his stick is off of the end line. Somebody would have to do enough to shake free to take a shot that would end up going wide for him to go back to, for someone else to back it up, for him to go then pick it up. Because he was shut off, like face guarded. So like, he didn't really do a whole ton to, you know, work for the ball. They didn't really like do, you know, it would have been really hard to orchestrate something for him. You would have had to set picks or something like that. But like setting that up on the fly would have been difficult. But yeah, so RIT, like props to them. You know, they found something that defensively in terms of their game plan, they thought like would give them an edge, and they went out and executed exactly that. You know, RIT's defense is really interesting, you know, like, they're a really talented group, and they've done a really good job meshing in this year. When you talk about RIT, you immediately talk about how good the offense is and how many goals they score and, you know, how loaded they are and how many different guys they roll out. But the defense has been quietly excellent this season as well. And so they deserve a lot of credit for that. Yeah,
definitely. Yep. And just kind of moving into it a little bit. Real quickly, you know, we talked about it with that Salisbury game. You know, the whole reason they kind of came back and took that lead and then, you know, kind of dominated was all through that Bradall run in the second quarter. So, you know, when you can shut that one guy off that kind of, is that spark on the team, and you know, kind of make him amount to nothing in the game, you're pretty much, this is what you're going to see, a complete blowout. So
I mean,
so props to RIT.
He still has like 6 points or something on the game. Like,
I mean,
the ball gets into his stick, he goes and gets it off the back of the end line. Like, he still finds ways to get his, and you know, like, he's going to be tough to keep off the scoreboard completely. But at that point, you know, the game is out of hand, and you know, like, there were a lot of instances where too many possessions go by where the ball never touched his stick, and you know, the offense didn't generate enough, or the possession didn't even last long enough for, you know, anything super valuable to happen.
Yeah, and he again was a big aspect of why they kind of came back in the first and second quarter there to make it a 10-6 game. I kind of thought that might be a little bit of a turning point, but RIT calls timeout, gets everything reorganized, makes a great defensive stand, and then, you know, gets a goal and kind of goes on that run afterwards where we see them go all the way up to 17-7 and the game's over at that point.
Yep, yep. And then I'm going to ask you to put your goalie hat on, and I need you to imagine the scenario. Yep, sideways, because what was it? Forward is analyst, backward is pod boy.
Pod boy, sideways. Goalies are a little crazy, so we got to go sideways.
This makes perfect sense to me. So you got your crazy goalie hat on. How angry would you have been at the Tufts short stick D mids when they do check to man, getting beat to the middle of the field over and over and over?
That's the one rule. We are just learning short stick D midi with our 10-year-olds right now. And that's the first rule that we go over at practice. And I just preach and harp on. No middle of the field. I'd rather you get beat straight down the alley than the middle of the field. Middle of the field for a goalie, like, you can shoot anywhere. The whole goal's wide open. Beat down the alley so I have a chance to save it. Like, come on, man.
It's no easy task with those Tufts midfielders, or those RIT midfielders, excuse me, because if they do go underneath, they pull that S dodge and, like, come right back upfield under you and still get to the middle of the field on you. Or they go in the, if they're down the alley, they get those alley dodge to the upfield shoulder shots. Like, those midfielders are just so poised, and like, they manipulate the slide guys and they know where you're rotating from. And gosh, they're so good. But again, we're getting into a situation where we're continuing to talk about one of the teams that we're going to preview. So let's, let's start to move on a little bit from this one. Anything else here about Tufts before we move on from them? Obviously, great year, great all, just an incredible season. Player of the Year candidate, obviously. I think he's up to, like, I'll say 150 points, which, as I say out loud, out of my mouth, sounds like I'm, like, guessing and throwing out just a ridiculous number, but I actually think that he is at 150 points. So super, you know, just an incredible year for him. Jack Boyden at attack, also phenomenal numbers, finding his role as a finisher, really does a lot for them as well. And they're going to be a group that's interesting to watch, playing some young guys all over the field, playing a young guy at the faceoff X, playing a young guy on the first line midfield, playing a couple young guys defensively. So going to be interesting to see how they continue to mesh and how those young guys hit the offseason, what they look like when they come back.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and you hit the nail on the head. It was 150 for the points exactly there for Bradle. So,
yeah,
I mean, just a
four going into that game, and then had six. So,
okay. Well, yeah, just insane numbers. So props to him. Easily could be one of the players of the year there. So looking out for that, but props to him. Then, you know, they have a great team kind of coming back. You know, Garzone was, we talked about it in the Salisbury game. He can be a difference maker for that team when he's kind of on. So they're going to have a couple more years of him. So I'm going to be looking for him to kind of turn the corner and maybe be a little bit more consistent throughout the entire year. And in certain aspects of the game, you know, not see those lapses where we're seeing some shots go in on him. So if he can kind of do that and turn that corner and kind of, you know, like we were talking about with Salisbury, be a keystone of that defense for a long time to come, that's going to be huge for the team. So So looking forward to seeing them. They're going to be an absolute wagon, you know, just like they always are. They're going to reload and come back with a bunch more slick guys and shoot it 100 more times next year. So I can't wait to watch it.
All right. So now, obviously, the quarterfinal that Union fans have been waiting for us, that the York haters of teams around this area that listen to us be sad and then get mad when we're happy. You guys are going to be real happy for us to get to this one with Union 11, York 8, losing in the semifinals. Obviously, a tough pill to swallow for the Spartans, but this is a Union team that, you know, you have a ton of respect for. That's tough. They play a, you know, hard-nosed style of lacrosse. So, like, you know, as tough of a pill as it is to swallow, they're a team that, you know, if they're going to be moving on out of this experience, you can kind of be happy for them in that moment as well.
Yeah. You know, whenever York has been knocked out historically in the tournament, you know, I always sit there and think, like, man, this stings. I hate seeing us lose to these guys. You know, I hate seeing this team go on or that team go on. But, you know, this was one where when I had some time to process it and, you know, sit down and take it all in, you know, I am pretty happy for Union. You know, they're a great group of kids and, you know, a great coach there. So they're kind of putting it all together and getting hot right now, which is good. You know, it's the right time to do it. So that they had a great game plan, came out and played hard. And, you know, so it was good for them to get that win and great for their program. And I am happy if there was a team to beat York and knock them out that it had to be Union. So that's all I had to say about that for sure.
All right, Boris. So we're going to go ahead and do, we're definitely going to hit a lot more about Union when we go to the review. This game in general, it was kind of a tale of two halves with York kind of slow to start there. Especially, you know, don't get a save or a face-off win until it's already, you know, a few goals deep into that hole. They do battle back and kind of give themselves a fighting chance. They just don't quite have the finishing numbers that they would have needed to and finish at the right clip that they need to make that happen. Donahue makes, you know, 16 saves. Some of them, when we give them, they just kind of shoot right into a stick, and some of them are pretty contested shots that perhaps York would have been better off working for something, a little bit of a higher percentage opportunity there. So, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, those saves count just the same. You got to make sure you take the ones that you're supposed to and see if you can steal a few along the way. And if your defense is giving you some easy ones, you know, that just makes your job that much easier.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah. He wasn't tested too much early on. We kind of let him kind of get into a groove a little bit. And then once he did, he was sort of lights out when it mattered there. That was good. I mean, good for them. I mean, the run in the first quarter was tough. I mean, we even called the timeout. We tried to slow it down, tried to play our pace, but like everything just kind of seemed to be rolling Union's way. And it just kind of how the day went, and York fought back and they never gave up, which, you know, that's a lot of props to them for, you know, not giving up when you're down in a 5-1 hole there. So that's tough. So,
but yeah. Yeah. So a lot of props to Union, obviously. They come out and that very first goal with Puglisi in transition just like spanks the top left corner. And, you know, that's obviously a great way to start getting one in transition from a pole that kind of sends a message through the rest of the team that, like, you know, we're here to go and we're here to roll. And that was one way that you know, when a Union wins the national title, that moment right there makes the documentary.
100%. That was awesome to see when I first saw it. It sucked because it was on York, but I was like, whoa, that was pretty crazy. That stunned me a little bit.
And that kid is a stud, Ryan Puglisi. He's
I
feel like we've talked about him a ton this year. I'm glad we were able to get him some credit early on. He was on the mid-year All-American list as a first teamer as well. And I think that credit has continued to show and, you know, continue to prove that it's been deserved.
Yep, definitely. What did you think you would, if you were, you know, still on the sideline, still in coach's ear, you're down, you get down in that hole, what are you doing? What are you saying to the guys? Not saying that anything you know, wasn't done correctly by any means, but you know, what would you think you could have kind of done in that situation?
Yeah, not necessarily a what would I have done differently, but what would I have done as well situation.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I really just felt like it was, you know, getting in Jack's ear and making sure that he was getting into the goal as comfortable as possible. And, you know, like stealing one or two of those while he's in that stretch could have been, you know, a big, big difference changer. And then offensively, just making sure that when they got the ball, they didn't feel like they needed to do it all at once. You know, there's no 2-point goals. There's no such thing as, you know, like, making up for lost time in the middle of the first quarter. Like, there's still plenty of time, you know, 60 minutes is a really long time, and RIT scored a goal in 5 seconds. So like, it can be done and you can score some goals pretty quickly in this game, especially, you know, if Vinny gets hot at the X or something like that, then, you know, you'd always be in good shape.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, York's played down, you know, down in the scoreboard there at halftime quite a bit this year. They were down, what, 6-2 to Gettysburg. And I think they might have even been down to Stevenson at one point this year at halftime. But, you know, they battled back from both of those games and ended up winning them. So, you know, I definitely never lost hope throughout the whole game. I knew that they were going to flip the switch and turn it around. It was just if they were going to do it soon enough. And unfortunately, it was just came up a little bit too short there. But great job for the boys. If we want to get into York a little bit here, just talk about their season. I mean,
yeah, obviously had a great year, break through the Elite Eight for the first time in program history, which, you know, is going to be great. Really excited for Coach. Definitely excited for Coach Witcher as well. You mentioned some PLL stuff with Ryan. Coach Witcher will be in the PLL as well. So Spartan fans will have plenty to watch between, especially on like a PLL day where Coach Jenner's team doesn't play Coach Witcher or Coach Kennedy's team, and vice versa for those other two, like a situation where all three of them aren't involved in any of the same games. Like, you could be looking at a full slate of PLL this summer, which is pretty exciting.
Oh, absolutely crazy. But yeah, kind of before we get into, like, you know, the good stuff with York, what do you kind of think moving forward for them that they could kind of work on to continue to improve to get to that next level? Because we did see them break through into the Final Four this year. So what's kind of going to get them into that next level?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think the big thing for them moving forward is just, you know, finding some replacements for some key parts, you know, finding a replacement at short stick D mid for Noah Bruno, who's been had a great career, finding a replacement for Kennedy and who's kind of going to be the leader of that defense. I'm not exactly sure off the top of my head all of the guys that come back to use fifth years or which fifth years are going to be able to use the sixth year. Those types of things I'm not exactly sure about. So I won't do too much speculating, but I will say that regardless of what's going on, the future of the offense is in good hands with Ben Mara at attack.
Oh yeah. Yep. He was such a great, great force for them kind of this year. He came onto the scene and, you know, I think you said it in maybe one of your recaps or earlier in the year, but, you know, he came on, he was an unknown guy in their first game. And by the second half of that first game, he's being guarded by the other team's number ones. Like you don't see that come out from freshmen. So he's going to be one we're watching for a lot. But yeah, so I just kind of bring up that point, just kind of like looking through their schedule here a little bit and just kind of like nitpicking things if I can, because we're sitting here chatting about it. I would personally love to maybe see them schedule a couple more of those North teams that we see them get so much trouble with, you know, the Union we got up there, RIT, we've never seen them kind of get over that hump or the Tufts hump really. So, you know, I can kind of think that they maybe could trim some fat from the schedule and kind of put on maybe some of these more Northern opponents that have historically given them some trouble. and maybe we can kind of get some momentum from that in the regular season.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Maybe add a game in there. It'd be probably difficult to drop anybody from the schedule. Most of those games are, you know, either Mustang Classic or RIT in Salisbury, who you obviously want to keep. WNL as an opener has proved to be a great game. You know, regionally, the way that the new system works with all the regional systems, like, definitely want to have some wins over some teams that are going to go and get, you know, additional regionally ranked wins. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. But yeah, I mean, like we said, personnel wise on the offensive side, Harnick and Mayer coming back with Mayer, you know, at 90 points this season and leading the team as a freshman and gets guarded by number ones, but halftime of the first game of his career. So like super impressive there. Offense is in really good shape. Defensively, like, it'll be exactly interesting to see exactly who all comes back. I think Ethan Green as LSM this year, who's been an excellent force, comes back. So perhaps he goes and moves down to close where he has some experience as well. But we'll see how that all plays out.
Yep. I think it's bright things on the horizon there for him. I can't wait to see where they go from here.
All right. So let's keep it moving a little bit then. That's our stage, though. You know, so we mentioned those winners and losers from Saturday. Sunday's winners, you had RIT and Union. So you have two teams from the Liberty League advancing to the national championship. And then losers out of that, you have York packing up and heading home. And then you have Tufts packing up and heading home. All right, you ready to get into some preview and talk some storylines here?
Let's do it.
All right, the big storyline here, number one thing for me, for, you know, I think just fans in general across the sport, and this isn't a lacrosse thing in general. This is a legacy thing across all sports. You know, like, any team can, you know, string together one and can win a national championship, but it takes, you know, dynasties, it takes significant programs, it takes leadership to go and do it back to back, you know. And so RIT looks to establish themselves as one of those teams that goes back to back. So far in Division III lacrosse, we've seen Salisbury do it a couple times. They did it going back to back in 16 and 17, in 2011 and 2012, in 2007 and 2008, 2003, 4, and 5. So they three-peat there. And then they do it in 94, 95. Tufts does it in 14 and 15. Middlebury does it 2000 through 2002, so they three-peat as well. Naz in 96, 97. And then you had a string of Hobart who won it 11 straight years from 1980 to 1991.
Great history facts there, Dan. Love that.
Yep, love to be able to provide some context there. But essentially what we're talking here is RIT joining one of five other programs that in the history of Division III lacrosse have been able to go back to back. So, you know, really some history at stake here. And like we said, establishing yourself from a team that's won a national championship and has some appearances to a team that, you know, is a legacy and has gone back to back.
Yeah. It's going to be just such a great game to see. I mean, two Liberty League teams coming out and meeting in the championship, you know, maybe not what either of us projected starting off this year. But, you know, I do think these are probably two of the best teams from the whole slate this year in D3. So I'm happy that both of them could come in and make it. And it's going to be an awesome game. I can't wait for it.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Like, Union coming out and being in that bracket on that left side, like, I absolutely had to be one of those teams that, you know, maybe wasn't the very first team you thought was going to make it out on that side, but they were right up there with, you know, any of the top seeds to make it out and have a chance to fight for national championship.
Yeah, and you know, so I was looking through their schedule a little bit. You know, they had they started off hot and just had, you know, quite the run in the beginning of the undefeated streak until they did run into RIT, where, you know, that was a 1-point game. If you want to get into that one a little bit, where it was a hard fought battle, tied at the end of the first. Yep. And that
was after they had already beat Tufts, correct?
Correct. Yep. So this was after the Tufts win. They're coming up hot. And, you know, it's tied at the end of the first quarter. Then RIT comes in, takes a little bit of a lead. And Union has a little bit of a run in the fourth quarter, but it ends up just being not enough. And RIT comes away with a 14-13. But then moving forward after that, Union kind of bounces back strong, plays hard all the way up until that St. Lawrence loss in the Liberty League semifinals, which was a little surprising. But, you know, they battle back from that and end up having a great run in this tournament and, you know, beating some historically great teams as well as, you know, just some uber talented teams on top of that. So I think they're poised right now and in a good spot to be a big contender in this game.
Yeah, and I actually got to attend the media availability Zoom with Coach Whitford today. So I was able to ask that question and kind of allude to what you were saying with that St. Lawrence loss late in the season. You know, they dropped that loss late in the season. They are sent on the road for Elite Eight and semifinals to go, you know, on a pretty significant trip from upstate New York down to Newport News and Virginia Beach for back-to-back games. Meanwhile, they're proctoring exams and things like that as it's happening, and they're, you know, still doing all that stuff, and, like, so much is going against them. And his answer was awesome. He just kind of, like we said, like, it's really clear to tell that this team is super tough watching them on film. He's like, yeah, we have a bunch of tough kids that, you know, in those moments of, you know, backs against the wall, or you have overwhelmed with work, or, you know, you're a little bit stressed out, like, you know, the way to get yourself out of those jams like that is hard work and being tough. And that's exactly those types of kids that they have. So it kind of checks out that, you know, despite those things going against them, that they're able to find a way to be successful.
Yeah, that's very well put and very impressive that, you know, these, you know, student athletes, we always kind of harped on it at York, you know, student comes first there, that, you know, they're, you know, even though they are making this deep run in the playoffs, and this is so important that they're, you know, prioritizing classes first. And, you know, I'm sure they were all at their 8 a.m.s the very next day after you know, getting into the championship. So that's incredible.
We mentioned it at the beginning of the episode, obviously. A whole lot of people this week are not going to be thinking that Union really has a chance in it. I've gotten some pretty egregious texts about how good RIT is and how, you know, this is going to be a boring day or a boring championship, things like that. And so that was why we had to get that miracle speech in and, you know, let them know. We believe in an underdog story here. And so I have a stat here for you, but the last 20 games of Union versus RIT have all fallen in favor of RIT, so 20 straight. But the last four of those games were all decided by just 6 goals. So, you know, as of late, really been bouncing on. And so just kind of a crazy stat there for you. What do you think of that?
That's insane. Yeah, that, you know, that actually reminds me of a little anecdote back when I was, you know, playing in the little person league. You know, we had a team that beat us the first time in the season 10-1, and then they beat us the very next day in the other league 10-2. And you know, we didn't think we could ever beat them, and we ended up playing them in the semifinals to go to the state championship, and we ended up beating them 10-9. It was the most insane comeback from a 9-10 team you've ever seen. I might be speaking a little biasly there, but you know, it was pretty insane to see.
The stakes are literally the exact same.
The exact same, you know, state championship, national championship, it's the same exact thing. But no, it was awesome. So this kind of reminds me of that, you know, where you know, it just takes that one game where you can kind of put it all together, know your opponent, know you can beat them, and just come out on any given day and be that winner. So, you know, I think they can do it. I think they have the talent. I think they have the know-how. They got the guys that have been playing together that can do it. But, you know, it's going to be, you know, if the chips fall their way that day, it's going to be tight.
Yep, definitely. And then another thing you mentioned there that he kind of hit on, like I said, during that media availability, there's so much familiarity between the teams. Like, how much do you think, and I think he's kind of right alluding to it, but how much do you feel like that comfort and familiarity is going to actually be, you know, pretty helpful for navigating a national championship day that obviously isn't very familiar?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's not something I can speak from experience from, but, you know, I better believe that, you know, it's gotta be a lot to take in. You know, it's a giant stage. It's something you've been working for your entire life, and it's been this entire buildup just to this moment. So it's going to be a lot. There's going to be nerves that are going on like crazy there. So it's going to kind of, they're going to kind of need to keep those in check. And it's going to be especially tough for Union, you know, since they're a team that hasn't really been there before. So they're going to kind of need to get those in quick. But to your point, you know, since it is a team that they've played a little bit more, I think that's going to allow Union to kind of kick those nerves early and kind of get them into a rhythm of where they know how to play RIT. Because we've seen it in just this season, you know, they know how to play RIT and they can play them close. So I think if they can kind of get into that same sort of rhythm and keep it close and limit those shots, it's going to be a tight one.
Yeah, that's a good point. So with that said, let's kind of just keep diving in on these teams there. Let's go ahead and we'll shift to RIT. And we've talked obviously a lot about their offense. So this is another hat that I'm going to ask you to wear. Maybe you have to go like twisted the other direction. But I need your defensive coordinator cap on. And I want you to kind of talk us through what you think you would do to kind of slow RIT's offense down. If you are, you know, a defensive coordinator going into a national championship game against the Tigers.
I mean, that's a pretty tall task to ask, but I'll do my best here.
That's all I can ask for. So,
I mean, that's all you can give against this RIT offense. But sure. With how they play, you know, they kind of dictate the game. So you're going to kind of first have to get their whole team out of rhythm and make them kind of play a different game that they don't want to play, which is slowing it down and kind of working for those good shots rather than getting those quick transition goals and things like that. So that's going to be the first off, just kind of controlling the tempo and the pace of the game and not letting RIT get into their rhythm. And that's a whole team standpoint. But defensively, I mean, we talked about it a little bit where if you zone them, you know, they're just too slick and they're too fast with the ball that doesn't work. So don't go to the zone. I think that's a big no-no. They've proven that they can beat it. I think you got to stick straight up man-to-man. You got to let Puglisi work on just kind of ball out and hope that he can cause a lot of havoc and get some turnovers. And then other than that, they're just going to really, really rely on Donahue to make some big saves. I think if I'm the DC right now for Union, I'm telling our guys they're going to get shots. You know, I'm telling Donahue, you're going to need 15, 20 saves in order for us to be in this game at all and be competitive. So that's kind of the defense that I'm setting up for. That's the game plan that I'm having the guys kind of go in with. And if they can replicate that and be ready for that, that's going to give our offense a chance to be in the game. So that's where I would kind of go from there.
All right, so I agree with you on all those, and you know, that's obviously a great point. Got to try and get them disrupted and get them kind of a little bit out of their rhythm. They're so multiple though, and like so dangerous in so many different ways. But what about them to you kind of comes off as the scariest thing when you watch them play?
Well, just RIT. I mean, it's just the pace at which they can score at. I mean, you talked about it in the Tufts game where they can score within 5 seconds of a faceoff. So it just makes you feel that no matter what lead you get to, no matter how close you can make the game going into the fourth quarter, like 20 seconds later, they could have three more goals and it could all be changed. So that's just what scares me, is their potential to score just so quickly.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
And so, Dan, question for you here is what kind of, you know, you're definitely good with the X's and O's and kind of looking at specific players and diving into them. So what sort of matchups would you be looking for specifically in this game?
Yeah, so I think the first one that jumps off the page here, you mentioned playing and trying to disrupt them and play them physically, and I think we're going to see that. I think Union's going to try and bully them and try and, you know, disrupt them and really play some tough, hard-nosed defense, and starting with on-ball pressure, and not just pressure, but like a physicality and a disruptiveness to guarding the ball. I don't mean that from like they're out and throwing checks or throwing like slap checks or things like that. Like they're out on hips and they're, you know, in this like constant cross check, especially their short stick D mids. Those guys really get out and do a good job of pressuring the ball and playing you and never letting Dodgers get head of steam into it or getting comfortable dodging and getting dangerous locations. Jake Titus is a guy that for them goes out and, you know, really has been a difference maker and, like we said, plays the ball physically and denies Dodgers from getting to dangerous spots like the middle of the field, you know, keeping those guys under. And so that's going to be really important, is forcing guys to spots where they feel like they can slide to them successfully. You can't really slide to those RIT midfielders in the middle of the field, because now if you slide adjacent where they're opened up and you aren't rotating right perfectly on time, the ball is going to continue to work around the horn and like they'll get good stuff out of it. And if you pre-rotate at all, those midfielders are good enough to skip it down to the pipes where you leave too early. So they're just so dynamic and complete on that, that, you know, ultimately the best option is going to be should be able to show to those Dodgers and get right back rather than actually sliding to them all the way. But the only way that you can do that is if you have excellent short stick D mid play that, you know, does a really good job of A, denying the middle, and then B, when they do have to get either slid to or shown to, they do a great job of recovering either in the slide package or recovering and getting to a spot where they can remaintain their matchup.
Yep, yeah, and that's going to be really important that they can do that quickly, because we've seen, you know, RIT can kind of bang the ball and expose those. So looking forward to seeing if they can stand up for the task there.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, like we said, we've really talked a whole bunch about the RIT defense, offense, but the defense has been great this year. One guy that I think is really interesting is on that side of the ball is Mike Grace. He's 20 for your film watching brain, 20, the big lefty. So he's been really a big difference maker for them, and he's impactful on wings, and he's got a good stick. And of course he has an offensive mind, because as we found out, he's actually a converted attackman. He played attack for them last season and is now starting close defenseman. And so now,
Is that one of the most RIT things you've ever heard, that they just took an attackman and threw a long pole in his hands?
And he's now like an All-American candidate, like been excellent for them all season, you know, so like very much so like the most RIT thing of all time, but tells you a little bit about their stick skills and like offensive instincts out of their poles this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a big point of, you know, who they are and their identity, and something that I was alluding to where, you know, they need to shut those sort of guys down if they're going to get RIT out of their rhythm.
Definitely. All right. So, I mean, we could go on and on with RIT and different matchups and things like that, that, you know, are going to be interesting for that one, but let's dive a little bit into Union specifically, and then we can kind of focus back on a few different matchups about it that, you know, we find interesting. But tell me a little bit about what you feel like Union is bringing to the table here, and if they win the national championship, why will that have happened?
Yeah, so I mean, Union brings some solid goalie play and some real good defense that they can kind of stand on, and then some offense that, you know, kind of distributes through a lot of different guys. They've had some guys come on the scene this year that, you know, they maybe didn't think that they were going to get the most production out of, that they've really gotten a lot from. So it's going to be, if they can get all their guys on offense involved and everybody moving, And then also kind of getting those transition looks too. Those transition looks and those runs are a big key of what kind of keeps Union in these games and has been a big part of their success. So if they're able to capitalize on those runs and kind of get those transition looks, I think they're going to be a little bit more poised to be in this game.
You know how on D1 games, like the big time games, they'll have the Clark's keys or Quint's keys in the corner for winning the game or whatever. And he comes up 2 points for each team winning. For Union, if you had to have the big dog 2 keys, what do you think they would be for Union?
All right, big dogs 2 keys. I'm gonna give it at 16 plus saves for Donahue in order for them to win this game. And I'm going to say Burns is going to have a minimum of 6 points total.
I like it. I like your style, going for production.
But yeah, flip back to you. What do you think some keys are for Union in order for them to kind of come away with this one?
Yeah, obviously, you know, managing the moment, program that's never been there before. So, like, you have to manage that. A rival that you historically haven't had great success against, so you have to manage that. But if I had to give you two keys, I think the first one I would give you is defending in transition, which I think they're pretty apt to do and pretty set up well to do because they've been using guys like Brian Davis and Kieran McGovern as two-way midfielders all season that, you know, are plenty comfortable getting in the hole. And what that does is it allows you not to have to play sub games, even when you do get in and deny the transition. If you don't have to play the sub games and can deny RIT that first step out of the midfield, you know, that's going to be really advantageous. So, you know, I would say that, you know, getting in the hole, playing excellent transition defense, denying the RIT long poles from being able to push transition, going into that Sunday game. I got to go back and double check exactly how many polls ended up with points to know what it is updated at. But polls for RIT were had 30 points on the season. So they're averaging over a point a game from a long poll. And so if Union can mitigate those and make sure that they're getting in, denying those points, and then not only just denying the direct points that they cause, but then the points and goals that they cause through their sub games. You know, that would be really important. And then another one that I would give, you know, among a million that I could give, I think one that's going to be also really important is not fouling. Union can't afford to foul and give RIT extra possessions, much less extra possessions that now they have their hands free. You know, you might as well just basically take the ball and go throw it in the back of your goal right away, so that at least you don't lose the time out of it as well. Like, that's how good they are on EMO. So you definitely can't afford to consistently foul. If you do have one or two, you got to hope that, you know, they're goal-saving fouls. You know, like they're a situation where you take a delayed game because the goalie has it and he's 60 yards away from the goal. And, you know, like you may be better off just taking the delayed game, taking the 30-second penalty and giving yourself the chance, you know. But you can't afford to be taking, you know, any undisciplined penalties or things that aren't, you know, what I'll describe as goal-saving penalties.
Yeah, that's a good point. I do love your offensive mind with just throwing the ball in the back of the goal for a man-down play. That's great.
You might as well.
No, it's a great point against this RIT man-up offense, though. Like, you basically might as well.
So let's go ahead and dive in on a couple more matchup-specific things here. You know, we've hit a little bit about the short stick D-mids against those midfielders. I think that one's really important. On the other side of the ball, I think another really important one is exactly how RIT is going to defend the Union open sets. So I think RIT, basically you have two options here going into it on where you want to slide from, whether you decide to slide from the same side or the near side. As they open up, Union is just so good at getting you into a spot where you've slid to the ball carrier and now you're opened up. It's very similar, actually, to the way that RIT plays, so they're so comfortable with it. But it'll be really interesting to see exactly how that ends up happening and how they defend that side of the ball as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's a big point. Those open looks have given a lot of teams trouble lately. So if they can kind of utilize that and get RIT off their toes, that could be a big, big point for them.
All right. What else do you have here? Anything specific for this preview here that you want to hit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just for the sports gambling degenerate in me, I love to throw out those lines and just make a little something for the people.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, yeah. So I threw down a 2.5-point spread for this game. I know it was a 1-point game last time, so that's why I'm going with the -110 payout. If you take Union +2.5, where you get the +120. If you take RIT -1.5. So that's what I'm thinking there. I do think it is going to be still a 1 to 2 point game. It's going to be pretty tight. And then I have the over under set at 29, which you might think is pretty low, considering what that RIT almost outscored that by themselves last game. But I think the Union defense, especially Donahue, comes to play, and I think that it's going to be not what we're used to seeing for RIT. They're going to limit those looks and limit those shots, and we're going to see much of a closer game. So right now, give me just if I had to give some predictions right now, throwing them out there, give me my heart. You want the heart or the brain pick, Dan?
Both.
Both? All right. The heart's telling me Union by 1, the brain's telling me RIT by 2.
Interesting. I like it. I like your picks. I like all your lines there. Traditionally, I think national championships are going to be a bit more low scoring. But because there's so much offense on both sides of the ball, I could see exactly where you have it. I could see you going a little bit higher as well. I like your picks. 2.5 seems like a good line based on the trajectory of it being so close in the last few matchups. Both teams, you know, are just so complete. Union, I really do believe, has the talent to be able to do it. How much of it is, you know, can they handle the moment? Can they get over the mental hump of it being, you know, a powerhouse that they haven't been able to conquer previously? You know, like all of these things that have countered against them, but they just have feel like there's this resilience to them that, you know, obviously it's put them in a spot to go and win it. You know, maybe it's put them in a spot to actually be the champions as well.
Definitely. No matter what happens, it's going to be awesome to watch. I can't wait for it.
All right. And so with all that said, you know, we hope you enjoyed this preview. We hope you enjoyed the review of all of the weekend action. You know, a good bit of banter there in the beginning, talking about the big dog's wedding weekend, not his specific wedding weekend, but his wedding destination weekend. My trip to Rochester, you know, we hope you enjoyed all that. Hope you enjoyed some of the analysis in here and some of this breakdown. We're really excited to come to you for next week, which will be probably our last episode of the year, unfortunately.
So bittersweet. I feel like it was just, you know, last week that we got together and started talking about the Mustang Classic.
I know. Yeah, it does come and go so quickly, especially once you get to that like mid-April, late April into May area. Like once you hit that point, it just kind of flies by. And so next week we'll meet. We'll talk probably all Americans. We will talk, you know, some individual honors. We're going to talk, obviously, a recap of the national championship. And, you know, we're going to have basically a 2022 kind of season in review episode. We'll bring our favorite memories, some of our top plays, some of our bloopers. You know, we'll have some fun with it. Maybe a longer episode with some coaches and some interviews embedded in there as well.
Can't wait for it. It's going to be awesome.
All right. So with all that said, we'll let the people go. Really excited for it. Going to be an awesome weekend. Make sure you're following along. I will be on the scene this weekend, heading up on Saturday. So I'll get to be there for the men's Division I semis and then cover the men's Division II and III championship on Sunday, followed by the men's Division I championship on Monday. So make sure you give me a follow on Twitter. I'll be sending out some good, behind the scenes looks and right from the sidelines, things like that. So make sure you're following along for all that content. Make sure you're following along, Caleb at
CAbney02.
All right. And we really appreciate you guys taking the listen. Excited to come to you guys for next week's episode. Excited to find out how this season ends up unfolding. Caleb, you got anything else for the people?
That's about it. It's been a great year, and it's been an even better experience being able to cover it with you. So thank you so much for the opportunity, and it's just been a great dream come true.
All right. And with that said, peace.
Love you. Drop that low.